We're obviously keeping an eye on today's inaugural proceedings, presidential inauguration, this Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. You're tuned in live. And so, and we must reject without further ado, let's go to Joe Biden's theatrically presented prepared remarks. There we go.
My fellow Americans, we have to be different than this. America has to be better than this. And I believe America is so much better than this. Just look around. Here we stand in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, as was mentioned earlier, completed amid the Civil War, when the Union itself was literally hanging in the balance. Yet we endured. We prevailed. Here we stand, looking out on the Great Mall, where Dr. King spoke of his dream. Here we stand, where 108 years ago, at another inaugural, thousands of protesters tried to block brave women marching for the right to vote. And today, we mark the swearing-in of the first woman in American history elected to national office, Vice President Kamala Harris. Don't tell me things can't change. Here we stand, across the Potomac from Arlington Cemetery, where heroes who gave the last full measure of devotion rest in eternal peace. And here we stand, just days after a riotous mob thought they could use violence to silence the will of the people, to stop the work of our democracy, to drive us from this sacred ground. It did not happen. It will never happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Not ever. To all those who supported our campaign, I'm humbled by the faith you've placed in us. To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. If you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America. The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly. Disagreement must not lead to disunion. And I pledge this to you. I will be a president for all Americans. All Americans. And I promise you, I will fight as hard for those who did not support me as for those who did. Many centuries ago, St. Augustine, a saint of my church, wrote that a people was a multitude defined by the common objects of their love. Defined by the common objects of their love. What are the common objects we as Americans love that define us as Americans? I think we know. Opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth. Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and defeat the lies. Look, I understand that many of my fellow Americans view the future with fear and trepidation. I understand they worry about their jobs. I understand, like my dad, they lay in bed staring at night, staring at the ceiling, wondering, can I keep my health care? Can I pay my mortgage? Thinking about their families, about what comes next. I promise you, I get it. But the answer is not to turn inward, to retreat into competing factions, distrusting those who don't look like you. or worship the way you do, or don't get their news from the same sources you do. We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes. Because here's the thing about life. There's no accounting for what fate will deal you. Some days, when you need a hand, there are other days when we're called to lend a hand. That's how it has to be. That's what we do for one another. And if we are this way, our country will be stronger, more prosperous, more ready for the future. And we can still disagree. My fellow Americans, in the work ahead of us, we're going to need each other. We need all our strength to persevere through this dark winter. We're entering what may be the toughest and deadliest period of the virus. We must set aside politics and finally face this pandemic as one nation. One nation. And I promise you this, as the Bible says, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. We will get through this together. Together. Look, folks, all my colleagues I serve with in the House and the Senate up here, we all understand the world is watching all of us today. So here's my message to those beyond our borders. America has been tested, and we've come out stronger for it. We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's challenges. And we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. We'll be a strong and trusted partner for peace, progress, and security. Look, you all know we've been through so much in this nation. And in my first act as president, I'd like to ask you to join me in a moment of silent prayer. Remember all those who we lost in this past year to the pandemic, those 400,000 fellow Americans, moms, dads, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, friends, neighbors, and co-workers. We'll honor them by becoming the people and the nation we know we can and should be. So I ask you, let's say a silent prayer for those who've lost their lives and those left behind, and for our country. Amen. Folks, this is a time of testing. We face an attack on our democracy and on truth, a raging virus, growing inequity, the sting of systemic racism, a climate in crisis, America's role in the world. Any one of these would be enough to challenge us in profound ways. But the fact is, we face them all at once, presenting this nation with one of the gravest responsibilities we've had. Now we're going to be tested. Are we going to step up, all of us? It's time for boldness. For there is so much to do. And this is certain. I promise you, we will be judged, you and I, by how we resolve these cascading crises of our era. We will rise to the occasion, is the question. Will we master this rare and difficult hour? Will we meet our obligations and pass along a new and better world to our children? I believe we must. I'm sure you do as well. I believe we will. And when we do, we'll write the next great chapter in the history of the United States of America, the American story, a story that might sound something like a song that means a lot to me. It's called American Anthem. And there's one verse that stands out, at least for me, and it goes like this. The work and prayers of century have brought us to this day. What shall be our legacy? What will our children say? Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you. Let us add our own work and prayers to the unfolding story of our great nation. If we do this, then when our days are through, our children and our children's children will say of us, they gave their best, they did their duty, they healed a broken land. My fellow Americans, I close the day where I began with the sacred oath. Before God and all of you, I give you my word. I will always level with you. I will defend the Constitution. I'll defend our democracy. I'll defend America. And I will give all of you, keep everything I do in your service, thinking not of power, but of possibilities, not of personal interest, but the public good. And together we shall write an American story of hope, not fear, of unity, not division, of light, not darkness, a story of decency and dignity, love and healing, greatness and goodness. May this be the story that guides us, the story that inspires us, and the story that tells ages yet to come that we answered the call of history. We met the moment. Democracy and hope, truth and justice did not die in our watch but thrive. That America secured liberty at home and stood once again as a beacon to the world. That is what we owe our forebears, one another, and generation to follow. So, with purpose and resolve, we turn to those tasks of our time, sustained by faith, driven by conviction, and devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts. May God bless America, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, America.
And with that, it's nap time for Sleepy Creepy Joe, right? You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Actually, I think Garth Brooks is up next. This is all... It's certainly an historic moment, but not in a good way. Now,
ladies and gentlemen, please be seated.
And you know, if you're playing the drinking game, every time you hear the word democracy, you are probably headed to the hospital by now. Whereas if you've listened for Constitutional ladies Republic or anything like that, you've been disappointed. Very, very interesting. You know, one word on uniting. Unity is meaningless under the oppressive force of the cultural Marxist repressive tolerance. And now I guess we'll listen to Garth Brooks.
When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun. We've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun. If I can ask you to sing this last verse with me, not just the people here, but the people at home, at work, as one, united. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Amen.
Is it me, or does it just seem strange? And obviously, no one is gathered in the our nation's capital except the power clique and the smart power projection that sort of flanks it. So that's interesting. Again, we're keeping an ear on today's inaugural proceedings. This Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. And so the Weather Underground has reclaimed the White House, I guess. Mother Emanuel Church. Where is Andrew Breitbart when we need him?
A song that in our culture is as close to both poetry and prayer as you could possibly come. And we're going
Marxists
to
of the world, unite, comrade.
Amanda Gorman. Our nation's first ever National Poet Laureate.
Yeah. All right. Maybe words on Amanda Gorman in a minute. I guess we'll listen to this.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother, can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us, We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it. Would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So, while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the west. We will rise from the wind-swept northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked south. We will rebuild, reconcile and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Thank you, Amanda Gorman. Now for our benediction, I'm pleased to introduce Reverend Dr. Sylvester Beeman, the pastor of the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Wilmington, Delaware, a friend of President Biden for 30 years.
As a nation and people of faith gathered in this historical moment, Let us unite in prayer. God, we gather under the beauty of your holiness and the holiness of your beauty. We seek your face, your smile, your warm embrace. We petition you once more in this celebration. We pray for divine favor upon our president, Joseph R. Biden, and our First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden, and their family. We further ask that you would extend the same favor upon our Vice President, Kamala D. Harris, and our second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, and their family. More than ever, they and our nation need you. We need you, for in you we discover our common humanity. In our common humanity, we will seek out the wounded and bind their wounds. We will seek healing for those who are sick and diseased. We will mourn our dead. We will befriend the lonely, the least, and the left out. We will share our abundance with those who are hungry. We will do justly to the oppressed, acknowledge sin, and seek forgiveness, thus grasping reconciliation. In discovering our humanity, we will seek the good in and for all our neighbors. We will love the unlovable, remove the stigma of the so-called untouchables. We will care for our most vulnerable, our children, the elderly, emotionally challenged, and the poor. We will seek rehabilitation beyond correction. We'll extend opportunity to those locked out of opportunity. We will make friends of our enemies. We will make friends of our enemies. People, your people, shall no longer raise up weapons against one another. We will rather use our resources for the national good and become a beacon of life and goodwill to the world. And neither shall we learn hatred anymore. We'll lie down in peace, not make our neighbors afraid. In you, O God, we discover our humanity. In our humanity, we discover our commonness. Beyond the difference of color, creed,
we're headed into a
origin,
break.
Political party, so ideology, geography, and personal
proceedings.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs at Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. Yeah, sleepy, creepy Joe headed for a nap now after the inauguration. We've been listening in bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Phone lines are open. Feel free to call in. I'll provide a little more color commentary on the proceedings, but it's you know, to me, it strikes me as bizarre. It's not substantive. There's a lot of theatrical melodrama, an attempt to do certain things, but you know, the Capitol is occupied territory. You know, it's been referred to as the green zone, same kind of green zone that, you know, Baghdad was reduced to when we came to unseat our frenemy, Saddam Hussein. The guy, remember the guy that Donald Rumsfeld shook hands with? He was one of the guys anyway. One of the frenemies Rummy shook hands with. And then there was that setup over in the Middle East, you know, the insurrection that was created as a means of drawing Saddam into a trap. And then GHWB said, you know, he attacked his neighbor. Now we're going to have to invade. And, you know, it was all a setup, all theatrics. And so I'm reminded of this. The way that, you know, I've referred to this as, you know, covert regime change action, which is actually happening right out in plain sight. We have a lot of color revolutionary forces happening around D.C. and the country, I would say, fomenting chaos and civil unrest. And I still remember Barack Obama saying, what was it? 2012 and 14, I believe, for sure, maybe even 2008. He said it a few times. 14, we used to play the clip on this broadcast of Obama saying, America, it's time for nation building here at home. And most people don't understand what that means. I was horrified when I heard it. And So if you go over to the RAND Corporation and you dig in and read Nation Building for Dummies, actually it's the Beginner's Guide to Nation Building is what it's termed. You'll start to understand what that means. And basically, you know, nation building is always preceded by some form of collapse, some, you know, failed state status, you know, some collapse that results in failed state status. The collapse, if you really understand what's happening, was, you know, intentional. It was lie hop, high hop, my hop, you know, let it happen, help it happen, make it happen on purpose. Whether it was economic destabilization, social chaos, or whatever, or a combination thereof, you know, the United States military and the military-industrial complex have really reduced that sort of thing to an artful science. And then, of course, after you have devolved into chaos and failed state status, it's time for nation building. We will remake you in our own image. And just looking at Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that, you know, it's clear to see that this is a good practice. I mean, Libya and other places, look how well this is working, you know, places reduced not even to rubble but to powder. And so that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with in America here. So when you see the smart power projection in D.C., what is it, 25,000 troops or something at last count, and then you hear, I mean, remember years ago when we heard, will you attack your neighbors, will you fire on your neighbors, the military was asked, and now we've seen guard members go through a vetting, the FBI vetting allegedly, and some folks were found, are you guys going to all follow orders, okay, no matter what they are, and you can see how in the situation that's been fomented, the chaos and the uncertainty, the general uncertainty on both contrived, fomented sides of this conflict, you can see how, you know, I mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz talking about the story of Gideon. That story has been sort of turned around and weaponized so that the American people, including guard members, perhaps, might turn on one another unwittingly. And so that's unfortunate. There's a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of esoteric language. Anyway, well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this in the days, weeks, months to come. For now, let's go to the phones. William in Montana, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris.
Morning, William.
It's been a long time. You know, I've been listening to this, and I don't think I've ever felt so completely slimed, you know, before.
Well said. I
by
agree.
All of it. You know, I was remembering the first inauguration that I remember seeing, and that was Dwight David Ike Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. And I was like 7 or 8 years old, and my brother, you know, after he got out from World War II, he on the GI Bill, he went to some electronics school and he built a television, and my mom was scared to death it was going to set the house on fire. And it was just like an 8-inch oscilloscope. And when you turned it on, there were all these lights. I loved looking into, you know, through the grill at all these, you know, vacuum tubes lighting up. And I remember sitting on a couch. I didn't have a room. I slept in the living room. And I remember sitting there. I had the mumps. And my brother convinced my mom that, yes, you could turn it on and watch this. And I watched Eisenhower. And I remember a lot of that. It was like, you know, 70-some years ago. And I remember, you know, tearing up, you know, when I heard the Star-Spangled Banner sing. And all of these things that we heard today, you know, when I know who did them, and I know their history, I felt just so slimed that this stuff that I have held sacred for, you know, 75 years, you know, has just been turned upside down. Now, I should be thinking about unity and bringing our country together and joining hands. But I know just how much, you know, duplicity and just complete lying and cheating that took place to bring this about. And it's a very difficult thing. Yes, I want our country to be great. But how can you submit and forgive and just forget about what has happened? It's going to be a real difficulty for me. But, you know, we will get through this. And the one thing I realized is that we will not figure this out through just political analysis or social analysis. That if we can't get down to a deeper understanding of faith, you know, if we can't contact that, we will not get through this. So I just pray for everyone that is listening that they will find the strength in their beliefs, whatever they might be, you know, to weather this and try to figure out how we put this thing back together, you know, and reclaim this stuff that we hold sacred. And that's just my prayer today. And I want to thank you for all that you do and what you bring to this station and your consistency. And I just want to wish you well. And thank you, my brother. Thanks.
Thank you. And you as well. Much appreciated. And I'm grateful to hear from you. You know, you're definitely one of the voices I appreciate hearing from, especially at moments like this. So thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Real quick, you know, again, I mean, I don't want to harp on this, especially today. You know, you have to, I mean, when you take this in, what happened today, an occupational force, what I would call smart power, which, you know, Hillary loves. I like smart power. It feels like some kind of third world coup. Again, you know, covert regime change action, but it's not so covert. I guess it's covert in the sense that the general public has no idea. You say that, go look up covert regime change action on Wikipedia and look how many times, you know, CIA and friends have been involved in doing those kinds of things over the years. And that's just, you know, those are the more overtly militarized kind of things. There are so many others. Remember, again, there was that article, the LA Times article, the U.S. is no stranger to interfering in the elections of other countries. That was back at the beginning of the Trump administration, and referring to the research of Dov Levin over at Carnegie Mellon University, and he, in his research, said U.S. has a long history of attempting to influence presidential elections in other countries. It's done so as many as 81 times between 1946 and 2000. That's acknowledged. That's an acknowledged number. And so that's in addition to the covert regime change actions and stuff. Anyway, when you start studying this stuff, you can't help but see the similarities. Like a friend said recently, as I've said, you know, I'm a pattern guy. So from that LA Times article, The U.S. has a long history of attempting to influence presidential elections in other countries. It's done so as many as 81 times between 1946 and 2000. And when you start thinking about this, think about the controversy. And again, I would just ask, I'm not trying to, you know, get people all lathered up, but just to get us thinking, maybe it's true. Maybe it's true that during the, you know, once in a century, as Biden put it, if it was once in a century, a once in a century virus, really, that arrived right on cue, just as predicted by Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci. Remember, what was it, Georgetown, 2017? Mark my words, this administration will, remember? And of course, Gates, over and over and over again, the guy who likes to play number games. Once in a century virus. Anyway. So, it's done so 81 times between 1946 and 2000. According to a database amassed by political scientist Stav Levin of Carnegie Mellon University. When you start thinking about what we've had here in America, so we have this once-in-a-century virus, and, you know, people are confused, uncertain, afraid, and you're telling me that record numbers of voters turned out? I find that seems to fit the big lie. You know, I'm more and more these days to combat the disinformation and the avant-garde cultural Marxist confusion that's being sown. I find Occam's razor is really, I think, in order. So in a once-in-a-century virus that appeared right on cue, you're telling me record numbers of voters turned out. The point is, maybe the folks who say, I think some of these votes are fraudulent, because historically, you know, we joke about it every election cycle. You know, Democrats went to the graveyard to register new voters and things like that. There have been exposés that have been done on that. You know, again, that was why Acorn was shut down, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not trying to vilify a particular, you know, political contingent or divide people. What I'm saying is we know that vote fraud has historically been an issue. There, as I've said recently, there are several documentaries that have been done. What's his name? Clint Curtis is perhaps the best illustration of that point. And, you know, it's been a generation. It's been a couple of decades. And what have we done since then? So maybe it's true. Maybe votes on one side are fabricated. Maybe that vote is rigged. But if that's possible, then isn't it possible to rig the entire game? So we should be asking ourselves that question. Is that a way to keep us divided, to keep us infighting, to prevent us from really bringing the mismanagers to account, as Jefferson put it? And I would say it is. CIA has been able to rig at least 81 elections or try to influence presidential elections at least 81 times, you know, in a 55-year period, then maybe it's possible to be done here. And you start to listen to some of the things that guys like Frank Wisner have said over the years, William Colby's testimony to Congress, you start to understand, it's probably happened here more often than we'd like for comfort. So just to finish from this article, that number doesn't, the 81 times doesn't include military coups and regime change efforts. And for that, go read William Bloom, I would say, among others, you know, Peter Dale Scott, what's his name? I can't think of his names. His name, excuse me. James Perloff, obviously. Read some of these guys. and others, obviously. William Bloom, though. So that number doesn't include military coups and regime change action or efforts following the election of candidates. This is an LA Times article. Following the election of candidates the U.S. didn't like, notably those in Iran. You know, and how ironic is it? We're hearing about truth from this inauguration, but at the same time, we have even the most courageous members of Congress and the Senate talking about how Iran is the largest exporter of terrorism in the world. Are you kidding me? The U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia are the exporters of terrorism. That is the terror factory, and it's a proven fact. Iran, are you kidding me? I saw, what was it, this week? I think it was Ilhan Omar. Was it Omar or one of the so-called justice, so-called Democrats, one of the squad, said that Israel is a terrorist or something like that, and I thought, oh, there goes her career. Good luck with that. Look up Dorothy Thompson. Listen to what Alison Weir said about Dorothy Thompson. So the number does not include military coups and regime change efforts following the election of candidates the U.S. didn't like. But it's not the U.S., right? It's the power faction, as Malcolm X put it, or the power elite, as C. Wright Mills put it. Notably, those in Iran, Guatemala, or Chile. Nor does it include general assistance with the electoral process, such as election monitoring. Remember when Afghanistan got democratic elections for the first time in ever? And there were DARPA blimps floating overhead to monitor election stations. Right, right, of course. Because, you know, it's freedom and democracy. Yeah, it feels free when you have surveillance blimps floating over the election stations, polling stations. So continue, just to finish with this article, Levin defines intervention as, quote, a costly act which is designed to determine the election results in favor of one of the two sides, end quote. Can't we apply that to what happened this election cycle? These acts, carried out in secret two-thirds of the time, include funding the election campaigns of specific parties, disseminating misinformation or propaganda, training locals of only one side in various campaigning or get out the vote techniques. It's called, what is it? Crowdsondemand.com. Helping one side design the campaign materials, making public pronouncements or threats in favor of or against the candidate, and providing or withdrawing foreign aid. In 59% of these cases, the side that received assistance came to power. Comrades, as the Marxist-Leninist would say. Although Levin estimates the average effect of, quote, partisan electoral interventions, end quote, to be only about 3% increase in a vote share. But remember, again, go back to what Clint Curtis said. Remember, flipping the vote, 51-49, in a way that no one could tell. And when you go back and you look at what has happened in recent years, I'm just saying, I think we really need to shut off the screens, put aside the rhetoric. It's so easy to get sucked into this stuff and become self-targeting. It's so easy. Even I was having this conversation yesterday, even for those of us who know better and know what's going on, it's so alluring and seductive when you hear these tropes and all of this, you know, jingoistic rhetoric and bellicose language, and the vilification and the identity politics. Someone says, you know, conservatives, progressives, liberals, blah, blah, blah. It's difficult not to get sucked into those monikers, even when you know better. So how much more so for those who don't? But I think it's time to set aside the rhetoric, do some deep soul searching, and find ways to bridge the gap so that we are not compartmentalized and on our own little islands, because I think things are about to get worse. I think you know, again, I'm reminded of the stabbing scene from Saving Private Ryan. Next week, of course, we have the World Economic Forum meeting to tell us about the Great Reset and how they're going to fix what they broke. And I don't have any confidence in that. It's not good. Unity means nothing under this, you know, the umbrella of cultural Marxist repressive tolerance, the oppressor-oppressed paradigm, which I'm sure Amanda Gorman got lots of, being a Harvard-educated sociologist. And so, you know, I think we need to do some soul searching. Let's go back to the phones. Tom in Florida, thanks for calling. Welcome. We lost Tom. Sorry we lost you, Tom. Hayek's Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10. I remember saying this, you know, before the 2016 election. Are we there yet? Why the worst get on top? Remember, a couple of excerpts. The, you know, guy or party, strong and resolute enough to get things done. Strong means, you know, who can get stuff done. What they will seek is somebody with such solid support as to inspire confidence that he can carry out whatever he wants. That socialism can be put into practice only by methods which most socialists disapprove is, of course, a lesson learned by many social reformers in the past. The old socialist parties were inhibited by their democratic ideals. They did not possess the ruthlessness required for the performance of their chosen task. Last excerpt. The third means by which, you know, the demagogue will unite people. Speaking of unity, deliberate effort on the of the skillful demagogue to weld together a closely coherent, homogeneous body of supporters. The third negative element. The it's easier to agree on a negative program, on the hatred of an enemy. Wait, you mean like pitting red against blue and what did he say? White supremacy and domestic terrorism. Wait a minute. White supremacy? Joe Biden, aren't you a white guy surrounded by a bunch of white guys? And other fellow Marxists? It is consequently always employed by those who seek not merely support for a policy, but the unreserved allegiance of huge masses from their point of view has a great advantage. Yeah, that'll do it for today's broadcast. Hope it was informative. Have you tried this? As always, truly is an honor and pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.